Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton. This episode, David and I have had absolutely no idea what topic to talk about, so we decided we're doing a grab bag. And if you are unfamiliar with how we do a grab bag, that's basically where Dave and I just start talking and we see what topic comes up, and that's the one we go with. So, David, how do you feel about a grab bag episode?
Oh my goodness, I get to start this one off. Yay, dancing clowns. Let's see here. I don't know. Why don't we do this? Why don't we share the kind of TTRP themed things that we've been just kind of doing or reading or conversing with people with over the last week or so.
Okay. Cool. Sounds like a great plan. Okay. I'll let you go first.
Well, I've got what I've been doing. My usual is reading blogs. Well, I have my blog, and then on WordPress, what you can do, which is where my blog lives, what you can do is you can put in keywords and use those keywords. And what it'll do is it'll aggregate different blogs that have used, not keywords, tags. It's a tag surfer is what it is. And it will aggregate all the different blogs out there that have one of those tags in it. And I put in things like Ascension and Reiki and Psychic, and I haven't put in 2012, but if you put in Ascension, you're going to see 2012. It's just one of those things. But I put in Psychic and Mind Body, and you know, I put a bunch of different ones in. It's been pretty interesting kind of seeing what's been coming. It seems like the flood of stuff that's coming around is a lot of 11-11-11 stuff, because we're coming up on 11-11-11. We may actually be releasing this episode somewhere around 11-11-11. So it's been pretty interesting to kind of see all that stuff that's coming up with Ascension and whatnot. So now I throw it to you.
Yeah, with me, a lot of the stuff that's been coming up is extremely heavy on the healing aspect and the law of attraction and getting in line with what you want to do and not holding back because of fear or fear of success or any of those stops that most people have. I guess the overall thing is basically people engaging their passion. And so that's been kind of like the big thing for me for the past little while since the past episode that we recorded. So, and it's kind of interesting. I know we've done a lot with the law of attraction, and we've done a lot with passion and a little bit with creativity as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of hesitant to start.
Well, we're having a conversation. So, I mean, it's whatever comes up is whatever comes up. It's kind of whatever's been a focus. So I think all bets are off as far as that goes.
You did say one thing that I was kind of interested in. We recorded our 2012 episode. I think that was like the second or third episode that we did. And that was like a year and a half ago. You and I have talked before show and after show where some of the earliest episodes that we have sometimes were like, you know, that was like over a year ago. We have a lot more information on some of these topics that we didn't have or that we did not express in those episodes. So one of the things I guess we, if we wanted to, maybe not have one topic, but kind of do an update of some of those earlier shows.
Anything's open. I mean, we could do that. we can kind of touch back on some of those episodes if you want. I mean, right now it's kind of interesting. I don't know what I was going to say there, but yeah, that's fine. That's fine. You sounds like you kind of had a interest or a spark or an idea around.
You were talking about the 11-11 energy, and I don't think we've ever talked about that.
Well, no, we haven't talked about that. There are schools of thoughts, especially to the numerologists and especially those who kind of adhere to ideas like crystal vibration and things like that, to the idea that when you see a sequence of numbers and a repeating number, that there is a significance to that. And a lot of people do believe that each of the dates that have had repeating numbers, which we've only got one left, is after 11/11/11 is that there's been a significance to that. There's a significance on 9/9/9, on 7/7/7, and there's a significance about 11/11/11 that they call them kind of these portals, these vibrational portals that are going to open up. That's what they say, is each of these is kind of a frequency that kind of opens up for raising our vibration and our consciousness and such. And that they believe that this is what's going to happen. A galactic portal will open up in 11/11/11, and that there is going to be an activation of the Atlantean crystals, specifically the ones in Arkansas and Brazil.
Okay. I'm going to say something that many of our listeners might be quite surprised at, and you might even be surprised at, and probably many of the people that know me might be surprised at. I've heard what you just said with different dates and different times and different astrological alignments and everything pretty much from the beginning, that when I first started learning about all this stuff. And I don't know if it's just me, but I've never really noticed a big shift or anything happen when people have mentioned, oh, that's because of this alignment, or that's because of this portal, and oh, that's because of, you know, these numbers, you know, are the same numbers on this date, and it's going to be ooh fun. And so I'm not discounting it offhand. I'm just saying from my personal experience that I haven't noticed a big difference between these specific times that people say are huge alignments or huge days or huge portals, and the other 365 or however many days or months that go between them.
Okay. Well, here, let me use this. Let me kind of counter that with this. Okay. I'm not supporting or denying it either way. I'm just kind of giving food for thought here. When do you have communication with guides, right?
Oh yeah.
Energy or spirit guides. Do you remember a time where you did not?
I remember a time when I did not consciously have a communication with them.
Okay. So there was a time where you did not have an awareness, let's say, of a communication with your spirit guides. That's what I'm assuming you're saying.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And now you're more aware of your communication with them.
Intimately aware.
Intimately aware. Okay. Now, and that's good, because we were creating a huge contrast. So what day did that change for you?
I don't know the exact date, but yes. I remember specifically working with my mentor, Jan, where she basically suggested, hey, have you ever met your guides? I'm like, no, I haven't. Would you like to? Yes, I would. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that was, at that time, in that session, setting up the communication, getting familiar with them, basically meet and greet, like, oh, hey, how you guys doing? Like,
okay.
So there was that experience where it went from subconscious communication to conscious communication.
Okay, so the communication always transpired, but you were not as aware of it until you made a deliberate choice to become more aware of that communication.
Exactly, completely.
Okay. Now, there are other people who could tell you that there was no switch thrown. That over time, they just started to either have angelic communication or spirit guide communication, or they started noticing synchronicities, but they don't remember a day, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people fall into that category. Now, so I'm likening the vibrational idea of a vibrational shift. I don't know that I embrace them wholly, but I don't denounce them wholly either. Mm-hmm. My thought of it is that maybe it's the same idea as these other things, that if you say 11/11/11 is coming, and then you go and decide that you want to be in Arkansas when the 11/11/11 portals open, or if you want to be with one of the crystal skulls when the portals open, any of that, perhaps you will see a significant difference. However, if you choose not to do that, there may be a difference between, let's say, November 11th, 2010 and November 11th, 2012. You'll feel completely different than you did between those two times, but it will be such a gradual transition you didn't notice. But that vibration happened for you more gradually than instantaneously. So in the case where if you're going to Arkansas on 11-11-11, would be akin to you saying, okay, hello, my name is Donald, and I'm going to shake my hands on my spirit guides. You know, you have wear that little thing on your
hello, my name is tag.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe it's where your equivalent of going to the 11-11-11 sacred site, where to somebody else who it's more gradual, maybe that vibrational shift wasn't like I don't think it's the same idea of, yeah, we remember when the iPad came out. We remember when the iPhone came out. But do we remember, can we pinpoint the exact technology that paved the way for iPhone? It was a gradual process, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's interesting that you bring that up, where you're talking about a gradual transition, because I was talking with Chessie, and one of our previous guests, I believe about a week or two ago, and we both said that, yeah, you know, in the past 12 months, looking back, we both feel like, personally, on a personal level, we have moved leaps and bounds from where we were just even a year ago. And so we have this feeling of having this transition that has happened over this time. And from what I understand, what you're saying is maybe for other people, this transition on these certain dates and times happens more instantaneously.
Perhaps. Perhaps. I mean, I am lending to the idea that there is a possibility of that. But I'm saying that even what my point more so is that because we don't feel these monumental events, because there wasn't a big earthquake that happened on 11-11-11 or 10-10-10 or any of those things, that's not to say that there isn't something happening.
Oh, I agree with that.
In fact, I think some of the most powerful things that happen are the things that we don't ever see. On the subject of 2012, a lot of people are talking about this big cataclysm that's going to come open, and you know, the train's going to swallow the fault in the ground's going to swallow the train, like in that stupid movie 10.5 or whatever it was. And
I actually like that one.
It was, oh my, really?
it was silly to laugh at.
We're doing a grab bag, I have license to segue, and I'm going to segue on this thing. Okay, first of all, you had the hungry fault.
Yeah.
Did we talk about this one yet? Sure.
No, we haven't. I don't believe
Okay. For anybody who's seen 10.5, which is a made-for-TV movie, so that already tells you the caliber that's on. And this is not pay TV. So you've got the train this earthquake fault is chasing this train. The train's like, I got to get away from this fault. And it's a train with these passengers on it. Oh, my goodness. And then what happens is eventually this fault is getting faster and faster, and the train can no longer outrun it. And eventually the ground cracks open, the train falls into the earth, and the fault stops cracking. It's almost like I'm going to eat that train. Ah, the train was tasty. I'm done cracking now. You know, and then they had, and I love this because I live near Seattle. I live in this area. They had the Space Needle falling. It took 20 minutes for the Space Needle to fall. It was just like one of those bad things where they edit the fall and it's falling. You know, it looks like it's coming down really fast, but it took 20 minutes to come down really fast.
Yeah.
Because they kept showing the people screaming and the Space Needle just keeps falling over and over and over again until it finally hits the ground. I'm like, really? And then in the middle of all this chaos, the father and the son are trying to patch their estranged relationship. I know, Dad, I never could live up to your expectations, and you're a doctor, and I'm a doctor, and damn it, you know. And they're doing this over the phone while planes are falling out of the sky, and I'm like, really? Okay, rant, semicolon, rant done.
Okay. Okay, David. So, for me personally, I was looking at it as pure entertainment, and when I look at something as pure entertainment, I take reality or possible reality out of it.
Let me tell you, there was nothing pure in entertainment whatsoever. It was the most impure. It was full of so much slag. Oh my goodness! I don't know how it ended. I was like, this couldn't have ended in any way that I'm. Oh, okay.
I will admit that since that time, I have become more specific about storylines. For instance, there's a show that I've watched since it's begun, and the way that they did the season finale last spring was like, oh, this is like the whole pivotal part of the whole show, the whole basis of the whole show. I was like, sweet, I've got to see how, you know, it comes back when the new season starts. Well, the new season starts, and basically it has a number of things that are so unbelievable, like what you're talking about.
What show is this?
Oh, this is The Mentalist.
Oh, The Mentalist, yeah. It's junk food TV.
Yeah, and I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it up until this season where, you know, all of a sudden stuff happens, and I don't want to ruin it for anyone that actually watches it and or plans to watch it in the future. When it comes back from the season finale, the way that it moved around and everything basically subjugated everything, basically negated everything that it's done for the past three seasons. Yeah. And then it took it out in a fantasy world, and it didn't, not even just fantasy, but extremely bad fantasy.
Well, you know, the thing is it was the way the show to, you know, while as we're on this tangent here, it was the way the show is written. I do believe it's very much it's cookie cutter characters and formulaic TV, and it's nothing profound. It's very, very, you know, I'm not going to apologize. If you like it, that's fine. I mean, it's on in my house. So, I generally am reading something or doing something online while it's on. It's not I stop everything and watch it kind of show. It's background noise for me. But I have an idea of what the show's about. I don't hate it enough to where it doesn't, you know, end up on our watching list. But it's formulaic, and there's only so far you can go with a formula until you've got a, you know, a formula, as because it's a formula, is repetitive, and people get jaded to it, and you got to find some way of re-engaging people if it's not fresh and new and imaginative to make it captivating, and you have to break outside of the formula, and that means that you're going into an unbelievable area with the writing, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, and I find it interesting. We spent the past couple minutes talking about TV shows and made-for-TV shows and plot lines and scenes and stuff like that. And we're talking about formulas and patterns and believability and unbelievability. And we started with the whole association of dates with certain numbers like 10-10-10, 9-9-9, and 11-11-11 that's coming up. And then moving on, the whole 2012. And it seems like the pattern that we're coming out with this episode is kind of a... Is there like a master code for the universe? And okay. And do we have the ability with all our beliefs or technologies or whatever that we can actually find this formula type thing? Kind of like, what was that book? The Bible Code. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
I've heard the title before. Who wrote it?
Dresden.
I'll look it up, but I think I've seen the author's name before.
Yeah,
I might have read something from.
And so it looks like we're going with all these formulas with that we do with our entertainment and we do with spirituality, and it's kind of like, well, you know, is there a formula that we could do for, you know, all the events and everything that happens similar to the Bible Code?
Michael Drosnin, by the way, is the name of the author.
Okay, cool. Thank you for looking that up.
Sure.
I knew it was a DR name.
It was not who I thought it was, but go ahead.
But so we've talked about this kind of an idea that we'd have to predicate stuff on, and that would have to be like the backbone of it to be like with fate and free will and everything, where if it's fate, then we could have a algorithm that we could plug in the numbers, plug in the events, plug in the time and place and be like, oh, there it is. Well, this is going to happen then. Okay, why? Because it's happened in the past. Oh, okay. So we have data. Sweet. Or is it just more of, you know, kind of like a consciousness thing, like, ooh, 11, 11, 11. That's kind of cool how everything matches up. Then, well, that means something cool has to happen then, right? And, you know, you get enough people believing that, and what we've talked about in the past with, you know, the law of attraction, then, you know, who's to say something doesn't interesting happen then?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of like the idea of no two snowflakes are alike, right?
Yeah, yeah.
However, but every snowflake has six sides.
Mm.
And every snowflake is built out of two hydrogens and one oxygen atom. And two hydrogen and one oxygen atom have the same pretty much basic setup. They have the same structure. When you take two hydrogen, just single molecules of hydrogen of water, and look at them side by side, they look the same. Mm-hmm. However, they start changing when you start linking all these identical little pieces together. But it sounds like we're talking about sacred geometry in a lot of those cases. Sacred geometry is very much the idea that you can have a myriad of infinite possibilities coming out of a specific set of geometric frequencies.
Yeah, kind of like in preschool or kindergarten when the teacher gave you a lump of clay and gave every other student a lump of clay. Everyone started with a lump of clay and the clay was there, but everyone made something different and unique.
Right, exactly. So the sacred geometry would be akin to the lump of clay.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So the same ingredients can have infinite possibilities for expression.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so that would make sense for how 999 can be different from 111111, can be different from 2012, and so on and so forth.
Well, here's a couple of components to these repeating numbers, I think. I think it's there is a potential within that number, mm-hmm. and I think it's if you give it potential or not. Like, there are, like, 111111, or, excuse me, there are a lot of people that say, well, you know, I constantly see clock 11:11 on a clock.
Oh, yeah.
Does that mean anything? Well, to people, it doesn't mean anything. And to some people, they're just like, oh, it's 11:11. It's just four ones in a row that are sitting next to each other. And that doesn't mean anything to some people. And because it doesn't mean anything, it doesn't. So they've not taken the opportunity that they could with that pattern. There are other people who see the 11:11:11 and 11:11 on the clock and say there may be some meaning to it, and they are able to. I think it's kind of a coalesce. It's like, for example, if you took, using the lump of clay analogy, you give every kid a lump of clay and they can make something malleable. What if you gave every kid a rock?
Hmm.
Eventually, they could probably make a shape that they can make out of a lump of clay, but they don't have all the tools in place. It's not really well made for making those shapes. So I think that when you're talking about frequencies like 11:11:11, it's the same idea as setting an intention on the new moon, those kind of things. There are energies and frequencies is if you want to capitalize on them. I don't think they're embodied with any power in and of themselves. Again, it's like the law of attraction thing you mentioned. It's if you put an intention with it, then you can really amplify the intention, kind of the same idea as using, you know, the macabre or any of those other things that are tools or aspects of sacred geometry, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it was kind of interesting because when you're talking about the four ones lining up, and I was just like, yeah, I see exactly what you're saying. To some people, it's just like, eh. And from what you can do that, what you're talking about with different people, different perceptions, different people with different pieces of clay and different rocks, somebody who's like a network administrator or programmer would look at that, and I think, and if I remember my binary correct, that'd be 16, 1, 1, 1, 1.
1, 1, 1, 1, is that 16? Let's see. 1 plus 2 is 3, plus 4 is 7, plus 8 is 15.
Oh, 15, okay. So 15.
Unless you consider the first digit a zero. No, never mind. That okay.
There are two types of people in the world, those who get binary and those who don't.
Right.
Oh, no, there's 10 types of people
in the
world.
There's 10 types of people in the world.
Yeah. That's not the joke anyway. But, yeah, so, you know, I think it goes back to the whole perception thing and how much weight you want to put in anything that, you know, any belief.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the more weight you put into a belief, the stronger it is for you. So people that, you know, see 11:11 on a clock every so often, or even quite regularly, be like, oh, this means that I'm getting messages from the great beyond, and or, you know, I'm in touch with my spirituality, or whatever they want to believe, and that's fine. Or, you know, you can have a network administrator or binary person go, oh, it's 15. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have a 15-hour. What are we on, military time? Oh, wait, no, we could do that too. So when I studied numerology, I got really mixed up because I could see so many levels that were not explained, and I could not find explanations for them. It's like, how far down the rabbit hole do you go with the numerology? Because everything that you add to it becomes, a piece of the whole. And if you say, oh, well, we don't worry about that piece, I'm like, well, if you don't worry about that piece and it's part of the whole, then why do you not worry about it?
Can you give me an example of that?
Okay, so in basic numerology, you have your name, and your numerology of your name comes down to a few numbers, and different numbers for different things of, what you're good at, what your soul wants to do, what your personality is like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Or the idea is that if you come with matching numbers to places that you live and people that you meet, then it'll be harmonious. And if you meet with people that are like a disharm different numbers or whatever, they can be disharmonic because they are different numbers. Well, okay, so let's go. This is where my brain went, and just to give you an idea of how in depth I went with this numerology thing. Okay, let's say it's Monday at 12:30 p.m. on any given Monday.
Okay.
At that point, it's 12:30 p.m. Well, okay, it's 12:30 for you, but there are other time zones too, but we're working with just you. So there's 12:30. So that's three. That's 1 plus 2 plus 3. That's 6. Okay, so that's 6. Well, 0 is an empty number, so that has to have some meaning too, but I never got a good answer of what 0 actually means. So that's a placeholder, but it means something, but we don't really know what, so we don't really pay attention to it. Okay, at 12:30 p.m. on this Monday, you are at an address. That address is, pick an address like 123, somewhere lane, I don't know.
Okay.
So you break those all down, and that's a number. And then you're in a city, or so you break that down, and that's a number. And that city's in a state. You break that down, that has a number. You're in a county, that has a number. You're working for a guy named Bob. So you break his name down, and that has a number. You have coworkers that also have names and numbers, so you break those down. And you can break it down so much to the point where it's like, okay, well, how many calories did I have? Did I eat this morning? Well, I had 312 calories. So you break that down and you add all these things, all these numbers up together. And then you can even go as far as to, like, how much do I have in my bank account? Well, those numbers coming together. If you add all these numbers up together, it comes up to one number. And as soon as the minute has passed, or even a second has passed, the number changes. So, trying to figure out all these different variables to all these different numbers that are in your life, that if you follow the idea of numerology, where things in your life can be broken down to numerical value, you have to spend way more than a minute to break all this stuff down to know what's going to happen in the next minute. In other words, you spend a whole minute figuring out what that minute means, and by the time you do, you're already way past. That's already way in the past. And if you try and forecast it to the future, then you might find something. But there's all these different levels that you can go to with numerology to where it made my head spin.
Okay.
And I was just like,
You were
okay.
having trouble separating the wheat from the chaff.
Yeah, because it's like people who work in at a certain address, that's a big part of their life. So that number should be important. How does that number go with, their personal number or one of their personal numbers?
Well, to play devil's advocate
Oh, please do.
with numerology, and I have my thoughts on numerology, but right now I'm just playing devil's advocate. If you take numerologically, if you take certain things, there are certain aspects where something falls into play numerologically that has more weight than another. If you, for example, if you take the 52 bus, the number 52 bus, it's like, okay, That's a seven. So where, what significance does that have compared to what something is more solid? Like you said, things change in a minute. So why are you going to try to grab on that fleeting minute? But there's something that doesn't change. Your birthday doesn't change. Or your name at that you were given at birth doesn't change. So perhaps those have a higher resonance. Maybe perhaps those have a little bit more impact. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and the thing is, I thought about that. Like I said, I thought about that. It's like your physical body looks relatively the same from day to day in like a seven, if you just looked at yourself in 7 consecutive days, but the clothes change. And from what I understand, what you're saying is the appearance of your physical body is more, has more weight than, okay, that came out wrong.
Well, no, not necessarily. I'm not saying that at all, because people do change their clothes based on the weather, based on their mood, based on a lot of different factors, and those color and reflect the mood. And I know what you're saying. You're saying that if you're looking at the clothes that they wear, then you're also have to looking at kind of the steps that they make in the clothes they wear, how many wrinkles are in the clothes, and how far does it go? How far do you take it?
Yeah, what is valuable and what isn't? Like what you said, separating the wheat from the chaff.
Well, then you could say that for anything. You could say that for astrology, like we talked about in our very first episode. And in fact, we had a discussion similar to this on the astrology episode. In fact, I asked you, when do you get to the point where it becomes the fact that you're just going to being guided by your birth chart, your natal chart, and you're a puppet because of where your stars are in the sky? And you said, well, you're using it as a template. You're using it as just kind of a way where tendencies and vibrations go. That's what you had said, you know. So,
But there's a difference.
What's the difference?
And you mentioned it just a minute ago. If you're looking at your natal chart, that is one moment in time. And that moment in time with that specific place does not change. And you can do the same, you can do a numerology reading for the same thing where the moment you were born and the time and all this other stuff, and that does not change. What I'm talking about is, as time goes by, you know, there's things change, different numbers come in, different the planets move around, different alignments happen, that, you know, what they do in numerology, they call them transits. Where
you mean astrology?
Yeah, transits, I'm sorry. Yeah, in astrology, where the transits happen and the chart changes significantly, and then that relates to your chart, and you start connecting those dots of where the chart is now and compared to where it was when you were born. And this is at the level where it starts getting really confusing in the astrological sense, where, you know, I think I mentioned this before. It's just like my head starts to spin. I'm like, I'm done.
Well, okay, let's use an example. When's your birthday?
November 16th.
Do you know your what that adds up to? 11 and 16, that's 1, and 1 is 2, and 1 is 3, and 6 is 9. And what about your year?
1974.
So 9 and 1 is 10, and 9 is 19, and 7 is 26.
That's 8. That'd be 8. But there's a 5. The 26 would go down to an 8. But I know that my expression number, I believe, is a 3. My soul number is a 5. And something else is like...
Well, I'm just for the purpose of example, I'm looking... I don't want your blood type. Don't worry about it. You know, and your shoe sizes. But your life path number is what's... Or your soul purpose number. I forget what it's called. They call them different things. But whatever your birthday adds up to, which is what? 11 what? 25?
Did you say I was letting you do the math?
What was the day you were born? I forgot.
Oh, 16.
Oh, 16. You were both born on the 16th. That's right. I keep forgetting about that. In 74, is that right?
Yeah.
So we got
10, 11, 12,
3, 6 is 9, 10, 19, 26, and 4 is 30. Is that right?
Yeah, 3.
So 3. Okay. So what that's basically saying is that for you, I mean, does this make sense, and can you work with it? You can ignore it or you cannot ignore it. And it's like what we talked about in episodes where we talked about kind of your destiny, which was a grab bag, funny enough.
And free will.
and free will. Now it's now so if you've got these things that your higher self has laid out for you, and like we talked about, if you try to wander off that path, how much of a challenge is it going to be, and how much are you delaying the lesson that you want to learn? I mean, of course, we're dealing with dualities when we talk about all this other stuff. So it's the same case. If your life path number, because the idea is the day you're born is what your destiny of your life, where you're really kind of moving towards.
Yeah.
You know, and if yours is a three, and threes are supposed to be about creativity and playfulness and all this other stuff, and if you're not engaged in that level of creativity and playfulness, are you off of your game? Are you moving away from where you need to be? In other words, you're saying, well, it could be meaningless, but is it meaningless or is it not meaningless?
Exactly. And you want to take it a step further. You can look at it where if we're going with numerology, which, you know, we're working with numbers, which, you know, is the basis of mathematics, you can express that three in a number of different ways. You know, three goes into six twice, goes into nine three times, goes into 12. Well, that'd be like three going into three, but 12 is not three. It goes into 18, which is three times six. It goes into 15. You know, you could look at this over and over and again, where it could be expressed in many different ways, like we were talking about earlier with, you know, you give 10 kids a piece of clay, they're going to make 10 different creations. So you can still express whatever number you are in a myriad of different ways. And I think this is kind of the point where we got to with, especially in astrology, where, well, if you can do this in so many different ways, does it really matter what, you know, your chart says or what number you are born in?
Mm-hmm. So if none of those matter, does anything matter? Does anything that we look at matter? These kind of devices and methods of divination, or even whether you're an ESTJ or any of that other stuff, you know, Myers-Briggs stuff. I mean, does any of that matter?
I think that it goes back to, you know, whatever you put your belief system in, whatever you put your perception in.
And so let's break that down then.
Okay. And it's interesting you mentioned the Myers-Briggs, because I've been looking at that a lot more the past week.
The biggest critics of astrology say that you can mix up somebody's astrology. What have they done is the James Randi type folk that are like, watch this sucker. What they did is they took not JRFE, whatever the acronym is for the James Randi Institute, not them specifically, but they did a study where they took the quintessential astrological types. They said, according to your natal chart, this describes you. And people were like, yeah, it really does. But it was for someone completely different, born on a different day, a different place, and all that other stuff. So are we just applying them and say, yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's me. Like, for example, the Myers-Briggs stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Are we doing that?
Well, like I said, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because this is something I've been looking at more often this past week, because a friend had mentioned it on Facebook, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's been a while since I've looked into this. Well, you know, I started going through, and I was like, okay, this is what it says for what I am, but I always come up different. I always come up, depending on my mood, I change quite often, depending on my mood, with the Myers-Briggs, and I'm one of those anomalies that doesn't really stay put with from time to time. So I was like, okay, so if I change, then let's look at some of the others and see if some of the other descriptions, you know, work for me. And I started looking at it like, no, that's not me. Well, that's sort of me. That's kind of me. That's not me at all. That's close to me. And then, you know, I got to the one that I come out with more often, majority of the time, and it's like, yeah, that makes more sense to me overall. That has the, if I was a betting man, a gambler, then I would definitely bet for that one to be the one that's going to, you know, have the biggest payoff.
So what do you do with that information? How do you have a payoff from that?
You look at it and it's a self-discovery where if you find out more about yourself, you know how you're going to work. And it's like what I was telling you about before the show. The project that I'm working on now is I want to get it done so fast so I can get it out there and have it just be done and just be like, because I'm really enjoying it. I want to get on to the next the next piece and the next piece and the next piece. But I know myself well enough that I like to rush things, and quality suffers as a result.
Now, let me pause you on that.
Okay.
How did you come to know that about yourself? Was it through a Myers-Briggs thing? Was it through numerology?
To be honest with you, I do not know the first time I ever realized that I was that way.
Okay, and that's what I'm saying. It's just like when we talk about these little tools, like numerology and all this other stuff, and Myers-Briggs and natal charts and all that other stuff, they are only as good as we let them be. But the thing is what we'll do is how many times have you gotten one of those little profiles, whether it was a natal chart or whether it was the Myers-Briggs thing or what, some kind of personality assessment, and there's always an element you're like, yeah, I don't know about that. How often have you done that?
Quite a bit, actually.
Quite a bit. And there's two things that are going on here. Either we're trying to lump everybody into either a nice categorical 12 zodiacal, you know, types. We try to make the archetypes too cut and dry, or, and there's too much variation between who we are as far as personality goes, or we filter out the things that we don't want to accept. The things that we don't like about ourselves.
The thing, I will tell you one thing though, there is one system that I read my stuff and it's like, ah, that nailed me to, that's like, that's definitely me. I'm like, okay, well, let's go read some others and see what happens there. And for me, I read the others and it's like, that's not even close to me. And this is the Chinese astrology.
So what gets you there to begin with? What gets you reading each of these modalities?
The desire for self-discovery.
Right. Now, what's interesting about that, a desire for self-discovery in this vein, is that we're looking outside ourselves to discover inside ourselves. And I understand that we are reflective, which makes sense. You can look outside yourself to discover your inside yourself as long as you allow the reflection to be valid. And there was a little great story. I don't know if you read this or not, about the man who was going to the village who wanted to find the key to happiness.
I don't think I have.
He was looking for the key to happiness, and he went to this village where the people lived a really kind of well balanced peace life, and he says, I want to know what the key to happiness is. And they said, well, what you need to do is talk to the wise old woman that lives up on the mountain. He says, okay, I'm going to go to find her. So he climbs and climbs and climbs up this mountain, and he meets this woman, and hopefully I get the story right. And he says, oh, wise woman, can you tell me what is the key to living a full fulfilled life? And she says, good judgment. And she didn't look at him. She's just kind of just threw that out there half-heartedly, good judgment. Yeah. He says, oh, well, how do I gain good judgment? And she says, life experience. Mm. And he says, oh, well, how do I gain life experience? And she smiles and looks up at him and says, through bad judgment. So the thing isn't learning ourselves, knowing ourselves through these. I mean, we can look at all these charts and stuff like that, but is the self-discovery this unfolding? Isn't it once we learn something about ourselves, then we have just uncovered a whole another area that we need to learn about ourselves? In other words, we learn, okay, I'm capable of this, and we make our choices with this, and then it unfolds that you discover a whole other thing just from making the choice. And the example I'll give here is I like to do home improvement. I really enjoy home improvement. Mm-hmm. To a great degree, not to a full degree. There's some things I'll hire out. I'm sorry. I'm in my 40s. There's just things I don't do. So, but a friend of mine that I went to high school with says, oh my goodness, it still blows me away that you do home improvement, because all I wanted to do was music and theater and, you know, when I was in high school, and I was also very non-athletic. The thing is that I do have athletic capabilities, but he refuses to believe that because he's stuck in this idea of who I was then.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I had that belief of who I was then, but once I tried something in spite of what I thought I was, it changed who I was in and of itself. So, I mean, how can we really define ourselves, and how do we do so successfully when we try to use these various tools?
And then how do we, can we use these tools to figure out what's going on and define what a day might be more special or have more spiritual significance than, you know, say another day.
Now, here's this, and this is where we get, and I think this is where we get into trouble with duality. Duality is probably one of the most toxic things for human beings. What makes one day more special than another? What makes one experience more valid than another?
What makes a experience or decision more valuable than another is how much value you put on it.
So are you saying there's no value in experience if you put no value on it?
I don't think there'd be anywhere near as much value on a day that you don't value as opposed to a day that you do value.
Okay. So if we're the ones putting values on it, if we're the ones assigning the values, then each day really has no value in and of itself until we've assigned a value, right?
And this is exactly what I'm looking at that I've experienced throughout with these galactic portals and high special days or whatever. It's like I don't see or feel or notice the value that some other people do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But what do you? So what as far as those kind of significances, what really resonates with you as far as when some people are talking about it because they say there's the idea that October 28th is going to be that's it. My own calendar has exhausted itself kind of thing, you know, through the Calamans, you know, days and nights of 13 days and nights, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
No. What? Calamans?
Carl Calaman. We talked about this in the 2012 episode.
Oh yeah, that was a long time ago, David. A lot has happened.
Carl Calaman used the idea from the Mayan calendar and said that we are accelerating evolutionarily at a certain rate, and each of these things is kind of like a 13 stair step. Kind of, I mean, like the Mayan pyramids is supposed to represent. You know how the Mayan pyramids have these levels.
Oh yeah.
They're supposed to represent levels of consciousness. They're multiples of 20, and there's 13 days and nights. There's, I think, what is it, 7 and 6? There's 7 days and 6 nights or something like that. And each of these is kind of a period of how we kind of evolve in each of these spirals of consciousness. And each time we kind of evolve a spiral of consciousness, it shortens it by a factor of 20. So there were like going from 92 to 2011 had certain levels of consciousness. And now 2011, you know, there was like, like 360 days in each one. Before that, there was so many years in each one, so many decades, then so many millennia. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And now we're at the point where each day and night is only lasting 20 days.
Oh.
And now today, right now, as we speak, and for those of you listening to this episode, we're actually recording this in the third week of October. And they're saying, this is it. We're in the last night. And October 28th, we're done. And who knows what's going to happen there. It's similar to some people saying the whole vibrational shift of 2012. It's all that. So, but you got to say, if we're increasing exponentially what we're capable of learning and doing, is there significance in that to you? Or is that just arbitrary looking at that?
Oh, I think any time that you are able to learn and grow and, you know, use the term of the century, you know, evolve, that, you know, it's a positive thing. And so I personally put a lot of value on that. I mean, what I do.
But what do you believe is the contributing factor? You'd mentioned kind of a little assistance or something like that from extraterrestrial involvement. But what do you contribute to this kind of acceleration of consciousness?
I contribute nothing. No, I'm joking. No, I look at it like, with what you were talking about in a previous episode where I am a drop in the ocean of life. And if there were no drops, there would be no ocean. So every drop is important, where at the moment I'm like a drop that's taken out of the ocean, where I can look at myself and light refracts through me and reflects through me in a certain way, and it has a certain expression. And then you put me back in the ocean and I look like everything else, but I still have an idea of what it felt like to have that light going through me. So I look at that as the importance right there of being able to express, and I don't know, I think I've just lost my train of thought.
Well, I'll help you get back on track. One of the genesis of this particular grab bag discussion is we were talking about all these things like the 11-11-11 and the end of the Mayan calendar and all these other stuff that I've been kind of seeing come up on my blogs.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're saying that this is kind of part of the apex that we're going into of this accelerating consciousness that we're experiencing. If you agree, first of all, do you agree that there's an acceleration in consciousness?
I do, actually.
Okay. So what do you contribute that to, and what do you see as signposts, and what do you see as maybe the next step, and all this other stuff? And we talked about this a little bit in our Ascension episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy. Those are some loaded questions. Okay. I'm going to take one question at a time. Signposts. What do I see as signposts? Like you said, we're recording this episode in the third week of October in 2011. What we have going on right now is, you know, the whole Occupy Wall Street thing, which is like a huge political, sociological, big thing for, you know, America at the moment. Well, it's interesting because if you take the past 10 years, 2001 to 2011, and you look at all the sociological and political stuff that has happened between there, to me, it looks like in the past 11 months, 11 to 12 months or so, there has been so much more intensity politically and sociologically with people saying, you know, hey, you know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. You know, just complete countries doing that. And, you know, now it's come over to America and there's people here going like, you know, we're mad too. We don't like this whole idea. And so I see that as a huge, huge signpost of things. There's a change in the wind, as they say. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's like, that's not just a neon sign. That's like a whole circus pulling up in your front lawn and, you know, horns going and elephants walking around and performers sitting there, you know, swinging in through the windows, like something that you cannot ignore,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to if the circus was three or four blocks away, where it's like, yeah, I hear a circus, but it's not really, it's not right here, right now. And I think what it is the signs have gotten to a point where everybody, or, well, I'm not going to say that, where almost everybody in one way or another is affected on some level.
And what do you think is the catalyst for that?
I think it's a catalyst of no longer accepting mediocrity from themselves.
Okay. Then here, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
If you no longer accept mediocrity from yourselves, and I've been battling with a blog post on this, and I haven't released it yet because I'm still trying to get it out right. But you know, we're going to sidestep. We're not going to get too political, but I do want to put this out here. In the U.S., the slogan is "We are the 99%," the genesis of which was kind of born out of, ironically, a multimillionaire's op-ed letter to the New York Times saying that the 1% of the wealthy owns the majority of our wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And the welfare of the country. And as long as we keep hoarding it and not give back to the economy, for example, through equal taxing and such, that it's lopsided. And then what's happened is people kind of want this Wall Street accountability and they want this government accountability, saying we're 99% of us want this other 1% to do their part, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you ask 1% to do their part, don't you get 1% of the problem fixed? If 1% of the people are contributing to what we think is the problem and they fix it, then isn't it 1% of the problem fixed? I know people say, no, the math doesn't add up because they control 90% of the wealth. Well, that's not what the problem is. The problem is that we've empowered only 1% of the people because we empower wealth. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So if we're saying you need to change it with your money, then if they don't change it, we're still victims. We still have given up our power because we're placing so much power that things will get better if this 1% only does something. So we're saying 1% still holds the power. We are the 99% expecting 1% to change.
And, you know, to me, I'm looking at it slightly different where it's not a matter of, hey, yeah, it's all your fault, Mr. 1%. You know, if you weren't so greedy and everything, then life would be so much better for the rest of us 99%ers. I don't see it quite at that level. For me, what I see it as is basically, look, we pay this percentage of taxes and for our income. We would like you to pay this percentage, the same percentage of taxes on your income. That's all. Basically have a kind of like a fairness thing where it's like no matter what level you are and how much income you make, you have the same tax rate. I think that is more of what it's like where it's like, you know, we're all the same. We're all in this world together. We all, you know, like to eat. We all like
I understand that. But when you give the choice to the people who have this massive amount of wealth, they didn't give it up to begin. They didn't say, you know what, I'm not really doing my fair share to begin with. If they didn't decide to do their fair share to begin with, and even though you've got this vast population saying, you know, we're not going to take it anymore, what if they cross their arms and say, we don't care?
Mm-hmm.
And what if the politics is truly controlled by money and the politicians say, you know, sorry, they got the money. We're going to listen to them. So we're not going to do anything about it anyway. So are you going to get every single person that's in the government out of office? Is that going to happen? So what I'm saying here is I'm just saying that we've forgotten the paradigm. We've forgotten that there are a lot of people that are part of this 99% that if – I love the Summy card that says, you know, I support taxing the wealthy, taxing millionaires unless I become a millionaire.
Yeah.
It's the same idea to me. It's like we haven't fixed the symptom. We haven't fixed the root cause and the illness that's behind this, which is empowering money, which is putting this great value on money. I still hear the same people in the 99% talking about, oh, if I could just win the lottery. You know, I still hear that. So
exactly,
what I'm saying is,
exactly.
is that
and
we
then
don't
they,
realize
and then
that
they
we're
would
creating
be the,
the problem.
1%.
What's that?
And then they would be in the 1%.
And then they would be in the 1%, exactly. So what I'm saying here is that if we're really using value, if we're the ones creating value, like you said,
mm-hmm.
if we're 99% of the population and we've placed such a value on wealth, who's placing the value on the wealth? Is it the 1% that's placing the value? They're the ones who have it, but they're not necessarily the ones who have defined wealth as a value. We're saying we need part of this wealth to fix the problem. We're not saying instead of really understanding where the true problem is. And I don't have an answer to that yet, but that's what I'm examining as food for thought.
Yeah, and I'm looking at, from my perspective, what I'm seeing it as, you asked what are some of the signposts, how is this whole change that's happening, how can we know that it's happening? I look at it as people are, they're finding that, as you said, the value that we put on money is changing. It's not like, oh, let's get as much money as we can because, you know, that's just what we do, and the more money we have, the more happier we'll be. The value is changing. The perception of what money is, how to use money, and what money could do for you is changing a little bit in this whole idea of what in people's minds, and they're saying, hey, you know what? We're the majority. We like to think about money this way. You're the minority. We would like you to think about money this way too.
Well, here's my take on this. And this is where I believe we would be truly empowered.
Okay.
Is what we do is we say, whatever 1% you want to do, it's okay. Here's what you do.
Okay.
How we do this is going to be a change in our core values, but this is how we do this. If you want to take power away, what you do is you take the value of money away. So it's like if you said this, let's say that what you do is you just say, you know, everybody has like pie, right? And you divvy out all these pieces of pie, and then you find somebody sneaking around and taking a bunch of the pie, right? Mm-hmm. And you could trade pie for all this fun stuff, right? And so that you look at those guys, and there's 100 people around, and one guy has like 90 pieces of pie, right?
Okay.
You cut, 100 people cut in 100 slices of pie and divvied it out equally. And somehow one guy got 90 pieces of those pies. And then there's 99 people that are left to divide 10 pieces of pie. Then what we do is we do this. We're like, okay, 99, let's do this. Let's change it from pies to cookies. But we won't let the 1% have any, or we'll just change it. And so the 1% guy is holding on to 90 pies, but now 90 pies don't do him any good.
He's holding on to 90 pieces of lint.
Exactly. It's just become worthless. So what we need to do is devalue the very thing that's they've won in the tug of war. We're like, you can have it, but it doesn't really mean anything to us anymore.
Exactly.
So it's once we do that, then I think we've got it. Then we're on our way. But I will say this whole Occupy, you know, insert city name here, movement, I do believe is starting to wake us up to the fact that we, and I think you're saying the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
That we are in control of our own destiny. What I want to do is I want to see some of those people that are in the 99 shift it and quit pointing the fingers at the 1% saying they need to change, rather saying, hey, we've got so many people here, we could do whatever we want. And they can't really do anything about it. Stop waiting for somebody else to change and let us make our own change and realize that when we're all united in that way, the change is massively impacting. And I think you're right. I think this whole Occupy thing is kind of a resurgence of a global consciousness that is coming together where we are really starting to think on a very globally conscious level, where we are seeing the interconnectedness of human beings on more than just a really cute thing to say and wearing a t-shirt.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But what is very real, that there is a literal line connecting one person to the next, that if you cut it, both people die.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's where we're going to have to stop it, because we are a little bit over our time, but these grab bag episodes are just awesome.
I know. They're a lot of fun, aren't they?
We always run out of time or go over when we do a grab bag episode.
Yeah, we do.
But no worries. David and I would like to take an opportunity to thank all of our listeners. If this is your first time listening to an episode, we hope you've enjoyed it. And check out our other episodes on iTunes and at our website at TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com. So for Take the Red Pill, I am Don Dalton, wishing you an enlightening experience.
And I'm David Deere. Make your choices, and every choice counts.